in the United States society, in the functioning of our polity society, I would say that fundamental are the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights. And particularly important one that I think is significant is those enumerated in the First Amendment, including freedom of speech, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of press, so forth. In fact, I would say that it's only because of those that we were able to have the development and spread of Buddha Dharma in the United States in the last century, and the further growth and the analogous rights made possible the spread in Europe, South America, Australia, and so forth. And we could see that places in the world where those things do not exist or did not exist, whether in parts of the Islamic world or the Soviet Union when that existed and Eastern Europe was under its sway, and China before it opened up, there were and are great limitations on the spread of the Buddha's teaching. Now, there's an analogous set of what I would call rights, similar to the, let us say, the First Amendment, that I think is fundamental to Zazen, to our practice. It's freedom of emotion, thought, and freedom from emotion, thought. If we're not able to sit and allow the freedom of emotion, thought, then we can't see the Buddha's teaching. And if we are not able to be free of emotion, thought, we can't see the Buddha's teaching. And by that I don't mean some teaching of the Buddha long time ago or even how it's elucidated now, but I mean our very life, which is the expression of Buddha Dharma, the expression of who and what we are. Now, since yesterday I brought up Matsu, I asked Matsu, I thought today I would bring up two other masters in a way who elucidate this Dharmic Bill of Rights, or at least this First Amendment as I see it. And the two that I'm going to bring up, the first is the sixth ancestor, also known as Wei Neng, or Daikon Enno, or Cao Chi. And also his successor, Chan Master Yongjia Xuanzui. Please excuse my poor Chinese, and I will talk a little bit using parts of what's known as the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Ancestor, attributed to him. There's historical questions about which parts are his and which parts are later accretions, and comparison of texts from different periods and so forth, but I'll leave all that for scholars to explore. It's interesting to me, but it's not something I want to go into here. And for the second text, I'll talk a little bit of what's known as Song of Realizing the Way by Master Yongjia Xuanzhuan. Because they are talking about this freedom of emotion thought and freedom from emotion thought and various other things related to that, which are fundamental in us being who we truly are and ceasing to be trapped by what results in suffering, harm, difficulties in our life. Even though, of course, they were 7th, 8th century China we're talking about. Doesn't make a difference. So, in the Platform Sutra, the sixth ancestor said, in this teaching, seated meditation, Zazen, So Chan in Chinese, from the beginning means not to be attached to mind, not to be attached to purity, nor do we speak of imperturbability. As to attach to mind, mind of itself is of itself delusory. Once one understands that mind is like magical illusions, or deluded mind is like magical illusions, there is no longer anything of mind to which one will try to attach oneself. So now let me go a little further. Now remember, this is ancient Bill of Rights, and you'll see why I say that. What is meant by Dzogchen? Dzogchen is sitting Zen, which is Zazen, which is what we do, all do. It means without obstacles and without hindrances. Sitting means not giving rise to any thought in the mind in regard to whatever object. Now, what does that mean? Chan means externally to be free of characteristics. Stillness means internally to be without confusion or not troubled by reactions. If externally one is attached to characteristics, internally the mind is confused. If externally one is not attached to characteristics, the mind is not confused. So in order to truly see and do this, one must first allow freedom of emotion thought. See, not try to do something about emotion thoughts. In fact, the sixth ancestor goes on later to say, if you stop thinking about whatever thing and constantly let your thoughts to be cut off, in other words, if you attempt to restrict thoughts that arise and to keep them going in a certain way, then that is being bound by Dharma. That is what is called a one-sided position. If we sit and try to control our thoughts, then in that very sense, we are making emotion thought into something. Then we are making thought all the more significant. And when I say thought, I mean emotion thought. Of course, emotion thought, as you all know, are just different perspectives of this process called mind functioning that we humans are. So it's self, it's perceptions, it's evaluation of perceptions, it's all the various ways. See, the sixth ancestor talks of Zazen as being Wu Nian, which means with Wu is with not or without, Nian is thought. Without thought. Now, that doesn't mean to be some sort of blank, no thought. Without thought means while you see all dharmas, while you see all kind of dharmas, dharmas means phenomena, but it also means mind phenomena, all sorts of sounds, sights, all sorts of emotion, thoughts arising, passing. Mind is not attached in a tainted way to anything. And its manifestations, while extending in every place, you are not attached to any place, and therefore always see, be this original, pure nature that you are. See? This original true nature. This is, in a way, very simple and yet very difficult. So, Master Yongjia tried to express this, not, I shouldn't say tried, expressed this in what he calls, what's called the Song of Realizing Way, or the Realized Way, or Realizing the Way. It's, remember, this is an English translation of a Chinese phrase, and the Chinese phrase has three characters, one song, one is the way, and one is realizing. So we add on when we translate from Chinese into English all sorts of words to make it make sense in English. So this verse poem, it's six character verses, so that's something we don't get to appreciate unless we truly know Chinese, but translating it into English, he says, there's a leisurely person of the way beyond learning of the unconditioned, neither trying to avoid deluded thoughts nor seeking truth. Okay. This is where most clearly freedom of emotion thought, neither trying to avoid deluded thoughts nor seeking truth. The true nature of ignorance is Buddha nature itself. This empty body of illusory transformations, meaning this very life, body, mind, manifesting in all sorts of ways, illusory transformations, is the very body of the Dharma. Neither trying to avoid deluded thoughts is being spacious. Being spacious means allowing all sorts of arising passing, whether so-called inside or so-called outside, whether so-called cars that pass by outside and birds that sing from time to time or coughing, or the various thoughts, feelings, emotions, body sensations that seemingly arise and pass. Being spacious means being this open experiencing, if I use that word. Neither trying to avoid deluded thoughts nor seeking truth. He's essentially expressing in different language exactly what the sixth ancestor said. Sitting means not giving rise to any thought externally in regard to whatever object. Not giving rise doesn't mean the thoughts, emotions don't arise, but that we don't attach trouble, react to them. That's what's giving rise to them. If one attaches to characteristics, whether inside or outside, mind is confused. Mind is our functioning. Of course, we get in trouble with the word mind. But anyway, the five aggregates we all know. Chanting in the Heart Sutra is exactly the five aggregates. It's a simple way of talking of this body-mind functioning that we consider ourselves. We consider our life. The five aggregates come and go, floating clouds in empty space. Even the three poisons, he doesn't say even, I'm saying the three poisons, which you know, I talked about in recent weeks, greed, anger, ignorance, appear and disappear like water bubbles in the void. See, that's, we don't try to avoid deluded thoughts. What we do is we witness with the witnessing of the true feature of this true nature that we are. There is neither self nor dharmas. See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Freedom of emotion thought. Freedom of all bodily arising, passing, experiencing is it. Is exactly freedom from it. See? So, of course, what makes it difficult for us is the characteristics that arise in our life, in the life of those who are near to us and far from us, in the circumstances and conditions, whether it's an earthquake or tornado or illness. So later on he says all karmic formations, which simply means cause and effect which arises as our life, are transient and empty. This is the great awakening of Tathagata. You've heard me say this in other ways. Buddha nature is ongoing cause and effect change, or simply ongoing change. Cause and effect is taken for granted. The point of freedom of emotion thought, or freedom of emotion thought experiencing, is to enable us to be the freedom from emotion thought experiencing, so that we can respond genuinely to what arises and what's called for. If we live in a world of trying to avoid and change, if we live and practice as if things need to be a certain way and we need to make them be a certain way, then all the more we reinforce this self nature and also this idea of what we think should or shouldn't be. All the more we reinforce how we evaluate what he calls karmic formations. Karmic formations means everything that we encounter: the floor, the sound, the traffic, the news, the illness and health of this body, what people say to us or don't say, and what they do and don't do. All of that is simply put together in this phrase, karmic formation, which is, if I want to say, from morning to night, where we live. But if we, as he says, release our hold on the four great elements in the light of that which is by nature serene cessation, then just eat and drink, because the karmic formations are transient and empty, and therefore not a basis for us to react, not a basis for us to attach internally or externally to characteristics. It's when we attach to characteristics which is of course emotion thought, then we become our confused. We become our reactive. We become troubled. We also become unable to see what's so. Instead, we create ideas of purity and impurity, things that should and shouldn't be, conditions that we think we lack, need, or shouldn't have. Then, even when we try to be still, it's just something we're adding on to our disturbance. That's why the sixth ancestor says, mind no longer confused while seeing objects. In other words, mind no longer attached to characteristics. That's true stillness. Doesn't mean we're a rock, unless we are a rock. But there are no rocks in here listening to me. They don't need to hear this Dharma. So, what does the sixth ancestor say? He uses this expression all the time. Friends in the good. Well, at least that's... No, I misspoke. That's the way an expression that he uses is translated into English. He says, see for oneself. Thought moment, thought moment. The purity of one's original true nature. This is accomplishing the way of the Buddha, or the Buddha Tao. Thought, and that's of course in the Enme Juku Kanon Gyo. This very thought moment, Nen Nen. That's what it's saying. Each moment, thought moment, thought moment, is nothing but this bodhisattva life that we are. So, freedom of emotion thought and freedom from emotion thought is the fundamental freedom of Zazen. The fundamental freedom that you always have, the fundamental spaciousness that you are, and simply sometimes gets covered over by reactive habits, sometimes gets covered over by confusion. So our job is not to try to control, manipulate those arising, passing, whether so-called internal or external, but rather to be this spacious true nature that we are, giving the freedom to neither avoid deluded thoughts nor seek some sort of truth, but rather be this spaciousness, which he can also call ignorance, or not knowing, or intimacy, or shikantaza, which is itself this Buddha nature that we are, manifesting as nothing but the karmic formations arising, passing, manifesting as nothing but the five aggregates coming and going. Five aggregates means this very body, mind, world functioning that our life is. It's just another way, traditional way of talking about it. Then, though poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance might arise and pass, we see them as just more clouds in the sky, more bubbles, to use a fancy word, bubbles in the void. Okay. Now, I said this not for you to believe or not believe my words, but rather to help us clarify what we're doing in our practice, in our zazen, and to encourage us to be this free, fundamental freedom, this freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of emotion thought, freedom of experiencing arising, passing. So I'll stop now, and maybe we can talk a little about this as clarifying and encouraging your practice in this session and throughout our life. One, two.
You spoke about the code of who, spoken about that publicly, about the code of who, and today I was wondering, you know, who stops me from being free of emotion, thought, especially of greed, anger, and ignorance? And I don't know the answer, but it's what is clear is that there's nobody here filling me with these stories or whatever it is. It's really not happening like that. And yet I can be sitting, and as you mentioned, I mean, we're sitting and all of a sudden, you know, we can have a thought that maybe is difficult to let go of. I don't know why, that's like a difficult habit, whatever. But, you know, what is not just how to let go of that. I'm not talking about that, but there must be something deeper than that. Is it just conditioning, really, or is it something else that's going on there?
Don't try to figure it out. It's not important. Because you're looking for some sort of more phrases and words. That's not going to be of any use. See, that's more learning and thoughts. That'll give you some more words, but that's not of any importance in this. It's not to get an answer to a koan. Just look who. In a way, our life is mysterious. Cause and effect is just bubbles arising and passing. We don't have to go looking, where did it come from? What caused it? What was the previous event that caused this event? When we use the word karma, it's not the way popularly people then start talking, I was such and such in this past life and I did that. That's not at all how the term is being used in Buddha's teaching, or the nature of cause and effect. It's not to go look for others. As the Buddha said, when you're shot with an arrow, if you say, don't take it out until I know where, what kind of wood this came from, where these feathers came from, what angle it was shot at, who shot it, how fast, what kind of bow, etc., etc., etc. If you do that, you'll be endlessly entangled and punctured and wounded by the arrow. That's not. And truly, life is this great mystery. If you're seeking some sort of truths and words, then in a way, you can get all sorts of formulations, but they're not going to take care of fundamental suffering that arises, fundamental harm that we do as a result of reactions. Don't worry about where it comes from. Just see what's arising. Be the freedom of it arising and the freedom from it as it arises. Then we don't react and we don't get caught by it. If you're caught by it, look who. Who's saying, doing, caught?
I might just have another version of the same question, but I'm just trying to square this freedom of emotion, thought, with the instruction sometimes, I'm not sure whether I've heard it from you or maybe somebody else, but you know, when you notice yourself spinning off on some thought, just then come back to the present moment.
I like to say open to the present moment, so that you don't think this, whatever you call caught up in emotion thought, is somewhere else, and there's some present moment somewhere else in, or somewhere in here. And it's important at times to label. That's a useful device, because otherwise, even though we say, oh yeah, I'm letting go of that emotion thought, really we're not. So labeling is a device that enables us, because of the strength of the habits of emotion thought, to label it, but not to label it in order to say it's a bad thought, I need to fix it, I need to keep track of all of them, I need to know where it comes from. Never that. It might be some of those things arise, but fine, they just arise in this mysterious process called being human. All sorts of, as Faye said, emotion thoughts arise. All sorts of body states, all sorts of reactive habits arise. In a way, they're all karmic. And in a way, that simply means they're the result of cause and effect of all sorts, physical, mental, biological, genetic, all sorts of ways to explain them. And they're all overlapping and have different aspects. But that's not most important. Except, in a sense, when you're saying, I need this, or I shouldn't want to do that. So in a sense, there is a sort of, for a moment, tracing back where that is arising from in looking who. That's why it's important when we, as you say, give instructions, we need to be clarifying it so that we don't get caught by the words that we use. Because our mind is so easily trapped by words and believes that the words are our reality, whereas Zazen and our life isn't the words. The words are another tool. But if we're trapped by words, then the words use us, the words strangle us, the words create suffering. And then we can even notice how we suffer because of words that other people use. We don't see them for what they are, we take them to mean all sorts of things. Yes, Ken.
Is that what was meant by seeking truth, then is truth in that sense, is that an impediment to being who we are right now?
Well, first it's an impediment because we have an idea of what a truth would be. It's an impediment because we think truth is somewhere else outside of our who we are, what our life is. It's an impediment because we turn truth into sets of words and phrases and can't be this very life we are. That's why a little bit later he says the true nature of ignorance is Buddha nature itself. See, Buddha nature. I'm looking at the Chinese to see. Let's see. No brightness. He's what he uses for ignorance. Looming. Those are the two characters that he uses in that phrase. In other words, when we're dark about what's so, in the dark about what's so, that itself is Buddha nature. Being not knowing. But we are all very uncomfortable about being not knowing. In a way, that's what Zazen is sitting down and being not knowing, being the intimacy of not knowing. That way we can be whatever appears. That way we could also let whatever appears disappear. See, that's why I say freedom of emotion, thought, just like freedom of speech. If we, in our polity and society, if we say freedom of speech only exists for the speech that I agree with, that's no freedom of speech. And of course, we constantly have people trying to do that, trying to say, well, only the correct speech is free, and the speech that I, for whatever reason, disagree with. Even if I'm 100% sure I'm right and 100% sure they're wrong. Our society lives on freedom of speech, freedom of thought. And our practice lives on that freedom. Otherwise, you know, truly, to go back to the other point I made, you couldn't have Zen Buddhist practice in the United States because people would say, you know, that's, you know, wrong. 50, 100 years ago, they say, and there are people who said it, but nevertheless, you know, they can't come here and teach this or practice this because that's wrong based on whatever set of thoughts and principles they believed was, quote, right. And many societies continue to say that now. But in an analogous way, when we sit, we don't tell our mind, body, this is the way it should be for the next 30 minutes. Only these thoughts should appear in my Only these feelings should appear in this realm. Only these sounds, only these body states. I should only feel a certain way. Sometimes we actually think we should do that. We should make ourselves feel a certain way. And we, you know, we do achieve certain states by doing that kind of concentration, but that isn't true concentration. And really what that does is create more difficulties. Even the sixth ancestor says the original nature of itself, pure, of itself, concentrated, only confused by objects seen and thought of. That's what he says. When mind no longer confused while seeing objects, That is true stillness. Don't have to create some sort of concentrated stillness that you hold on to. That's not true stillness. That's some fabrication that in its very nature sets up what creates more suffering, more delusion, more good and bad that we believe and then judge others on the basis of. See? Then judge others on the basis of being attached to purity. As he says, I didn't read it before, if you bring forth in your mind notions of attachment to purity, then you only bring forth delusions of purity. That attachment itself is deluded. Purity has no form or characteristic. Nevertheless, some people postulate characteristic of purity, and they say that it is towards that which we should direct our efforts. People who hold such a view obstruct their own original nature and are bound, meaning tied up, imprisoned, trapped by purity. That's his words. I mean, that's an English translation of his words. Let me say one more, since I read that much, let me just say the next sentence, because this is particularly true for us. Friends in the good, regarding the practice of imperturbability, when seeing people, just do not see them in terms of right, wrong, good, evil, or their shortcomings. This is the imperturbability of one's nature. See? Right there. We tend to see people on all sorts of bases, and we believe our judgments. Are they right, wrong, good, evil? Do they have any shortcomings? Are they important shortcomings? If we notice that, treat it as another emotion, thought, allow it to arise, but be free of it. Otherwise, we react from it and we create trouble. Not only do we see other people this way, but we see ourselves this way sometimes, whether our so-called past, or our so-called behavior, or our so-called fear. That's why our practice is not fighting these, but being this spaciousness that allows it to arise and pass, and yet not needing to act on it, not needing to react to it, because then we create trouble. Then we create all the self and other. Okay. One, two.
Well, I was just wondering, when you're using those English translations of what these guys are saying back there, you know, and he's talking about purity and all these other things, not to be taking out big ideas and characteristics and making up stories about it. So there's something that you touched upon before about fundamentally not knowing, but it almost doesn't sound like they're not talking about not knowing, and yet I guess they are, since to start making those words literally somehow, so to make objects of those words in our mind, but that I don't see. Exactly how they're doing this, talking about not knowing it yet. It sounds like they're knowing something. I don't know if that makes it very clear or not, but
let us say they're describing or expressing without giving you pictures to believe, but rather describing what's so. I'm not exactly sure what you're getting at.
Everything they say, you know.
Yes.
Whatever words they use, all of a sudden some idea pops up in my head.
Yes.
And then he takes it away.
That's right. Good.
And so that so, there's no idea that I can rely on or any, you know, whatever I make up in my head.
Good.
So that I'm stuck with not knowing.
Good.
And I don't see that he talks about not knowing in that way.
You don't have, he doesn't have to talk about it. You simply be it. He starts off, leisurely person of the way, beyond learning. Beyond learning. That's just the first phrase here. He says, he starts, can't you see that there is a leisurely person of the Tao, of the way, beyond learning? Beyond learning of the unconditioned, neither trying to avoid deluded thoughts nor seeking truth. See? The true nature of ignorance is Buddha nature itself. This very body of illusory transformations, this empty body of illusory transformations, which is this very body, is the very body of the Dharma. For the awakened Dharma body, there's not a single thing left or left to do. But notice he's not giving you anything to hold on to about this. Unless you see it for yourself, it's more words. The words are an encouragement for you, for us, to see it for ourselves. Or to cease doing what we do that creates the trouble. See, that's what his teacher, the sixth ancestor, has been saying all along. With Zazen, it's not a matter of doing certain things, but ceasing to do this attachment to characteristics externally, to be free of characteristics. It doesn't mean characteristics don't exist. It doesn't mean thoughts, feelings, emotions, reactions don't exist. But if we don't cling to them, if we don't believe them, then they don't create confusion for us. If we believe them, they create confusion. If we believe them, then the five aggregates don't come and go because we believe I'm this, she's that, he's that. We don't see their, if I use a fancy word, empty nature. Instead, we see them as fixed, separate, permanent, worthy of reacting to, liking and disliking, hating and loving, in the sense of wanting and not wanting and doing all sorts of other things based on that. See, then the poisons of greed, anger and ignorance don't just appear, but we imbibe them and think we should act out of them, act them out in our behavior. And I talked about in the past few weeks, for those of you who are here on Sundays, that those very things. See? But he says those poisons just appear and disappear like water bubbles. So if water bubbles appear and disappear, is it a big deal? If you're by the river and bubbles are appearing, disappear, does that become a basis for you to hate someone and like someone? if we see them for what they are. See, the point is, what is it we do that creates suffering? What is it we can do to not create suffering? Doesn't mean the bubbles won't appear and disappear, but we won't be run by them, and we won't suffer, or we won't suffer extra, let's say it that way, because of them. We won't be bound up. We'll be able to be the conditions and circumstances of the moment while being free of the conditions and circumstances of the moment. That's what I said. Freedom of emotion thought, freedom from emotion thought. In a way, it's freedom of speech, meaning allowing others to speak, and freedom from speech, meaning that we don't be troubled by others' speech and don't feel that we have to hate some and like others. Agree, disagree, disprove, prove, get upset by, get hurt by, and so on and so forth. See, what the speech we get most hurt by is our own, to ourselves, that no one else hears. In all the many forms that we speak. Okay? There's someone else? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah?
I was thinking about when you're talking about purity. I think you've already moved on from this point. Purity and concentration. I was wondering if practice is still, it has a degree of concentration in it. And focus and purity, if you want to call it that, but not. And I'm not saying to be attached by it, but sort of. But then you sort of, miss stuff. You miss the whole, but yet the pointedness can get to something in the mind that allows you to see something more larger. And that's what I was wondering if you could comment on.
See, if we turn concentration into a particular state of exclusion internal and exclusion external, then it becomes something artificial that we create. What Sixth Ancestor is saying is original nature is of itself's functioning, of itself our functioning is pure and concentrated, meaning our ability to hear the sound. It's when our mind is all agitated that we can't take care of picking up what we're picking up. Instead, we're half here and half somewhere else and worried about what am I going to do with this and what are they going to think about it, etc., etc. And of course, if you're playing a piece of music, you're playing the music. If you're picking up the food, you're picking up the food. But there's not an artificial forcedness that tries to exclude and tries to keep it be a certain way. There's just a natural functioning. Sometimes we pick up something, sometimes we put it down. Sometimes we exert ourselves and sometimes we don't. That's the otherwise ideas of purity, ideas of if I do such and such, reinforce I am doing such and such in a certain way, as opposed and therefore excluding all these other things, therefore believing this is and this isn't, and believing all sorts of stories about that. That's what the Sixth Ancestor is talking about. Because of course there are practices of concentration, but if you believe that concentration which you use for certain activities is better than someone else who doesn't use those activities, do those activities and develop those abilities, then you're in trouble. If you do exercise with weights and you develop certain strength, you can lift things, and someone else who doesn't do that or doesn't have that strength can't lift things. No big deal. But he's talking about the fundamental idea that people sometimes create this idea that concentration is something that they do, something that they accomplish, that I'm making myself concentrated, and that those characteristics are what are good and what will result in the end of suffering. But if, you know, all of that, he says, is just further entanglements, further ideas that fundamentally will get us in trouble. Because it's not to create something else that we practice, it's to be who we always are, which means all sorts of arising, passing states, all sorts of arising, passing, as his disciple says, illusory transformations. See? All sorts of them. No particular state is it, as opposed, see, it's not something that we're going to get. If our practice is to get to something that we imagine in our head or anywhere else, then we believe that how and what so is problematic. Then we miss this true nature that we are. Instead, we've set up good and bad, purity and impurity, and broken the true universe that our life is into what I like or don't like. So that's the point that the sixth ancestor is making. Remember, the sixth ancestor is also coming from, you have the previous stories, which some of you are familiar with, of the verses having to do with the mirror and the dust. In fact, the sixth ancestor begins, one practice samadhi is the practicing of straightforward mind in all circumstances. All circumstances. It doesn't mean just in the concentrated circumstances, whether walking, standing, sitting, or lying. Only practice straightforward mind without attachment to anything. That is one practice samadhi. Deluded people attach to characteristics of dharmas or characteristics of concentration and cling and say, sitting without moving, not giving rise to thoughts, that's one practice samadhi. He said this kind of understanding would be the same as insentiency and the cause for obstructing the way. So, we could speak more about this at a future time.
So when a really juicy thought comes up.
Ah, you're ready in trouble. See? Because you've added on juicy.
Pardon me?
You've added on juicy. That's not freedom from thoughts. That's
saying
juicy versus not juicy.
So you're just looking at the thoughts as this blank.
No, not blank.
But I mean, is they're all the same? Whether
no, they're not all the same.
Juicy or dull.
No, juicy is when you use that word, you're talking about reactive attachment to them. You like some, you dislike others. And it could be juicy like and juicy dislike.
But that happens to everybody.
No one says it doesn't happen to everybody. That's why he teaches this way. This is exactly what gets us in trouble. Of course it happens to everybody. It happens to each of us in our own way. That's why I say our practice is freedom from emotion thought as well as freedom of. You tell me, what do you do? What do you do? Bruce said it to you. When you get caught up in emotion thought, open, let go of that holding on and be this open spaciousness of it. Or label it. Or do some other practice. We've talked about many practices to do with it. The problem is we don't want to practice. We want to cling to it and play with it and say, ah, this is really juicy. Ain't I great for having this juicy thought? Who else could have had such a wonderful, juicy thought? In all my years, I've never had this juicy thought. It's so significant. Maybe I should hold on to it more and keep on, you know, ooh, juicy thought, and then tell people about it when there's a chance after sitting. See? We do that. See? You know, it's like, what's that movie? Oh, those movie, Lord of the Rings. It's like precious, that ring. Ooh, precious, precious thought, precious thought. And we become crazy over it. Which is what happens in that movie. For those of you who didn't see it, don't worry.
I'm just thinking about, like, some kind of fundamental human activities, like, you know, the excited entrepreneur who gets a great business idea, or the artist, or, you know, the mother who's charmed by her child. I mean, all these
wonderful,
really human things that, you know, you'd be crazy not to revel in.
Well, you can enjoy it, but if you revel in the sense and become too attached to it, then your child is wonderful one day, and a few years later, they're not listening to you. Then you go the other direction and get so upset. How dare them not listen, and how they're not going to, they're going to make the major mistakes, and then you become, see, it's the attachment that we're talking about. It's not that the thoughts come and go, or that you enjoy them. Enjoy them when they're there. But if we become attached to some, if we reject and are driven crazy by others, then we can't respond naturally. Remember, that's yesterday, that's what Matsu was saying, just responding to circumstances. So when you have a wonderful business and it's going great, enjoy it. When you're on the verge of bankruptcy, do what it takes to enter bankruptcy appropriately and to deal with your employees and your creditors in the best way you can. Otherwise, you'll become so despondent you'll shoot yourself because you're going bankrupt. There's people who do that, as we all know, because they can't face, they used to be this great and now they're, you know, and you know that's the what should I say, the realm of good drama, not good dharma, but good drama. In some ways, good dharma too. We've got Shakespeare and many others who, you know, show us that in numerous ways how we can drive ourselves crazy, despite having risen. You know, isn't that? My memory, and excuse me for a poor memory, it was that that's the hallmark of Greek drama, is that someone has to rise to great heights and accomplishments and then fall to great depths as a result of hubris, which you can call self-centeredness and attachment, that turns that accomplishment into craziness, into suffering and despair. So, yeah. Hey, you've got a great business? Wonderful. Serve all beings with your great business. That's what our bodhisattva vow is, to serve beings, all beings, in all the many ways that we encounter them, from morning to night, as well as serving all the thoughts that arise, juicy, not juicy, like, not like. It's that we troubled by some and revel in others, and then troubled by our being troubled by them. Diane, you want?
Excuse me. So if one really attends to their thoughts, and you're trying to let them go, you're trying to label them, but when they come at such a rapid rate, it's constant chatter. It's almost like trying to, I don't know what, to take a speedboat in.
No. You don't have to attend to them. Be the big, spacious pasture in which they could all run around, and they can come and they can go. Let them come, let them go. You just be the big, spacious sky in which they come and go. That's your job. Your job isn't to keep track of thoughts. When you're caught up in them, then labeling is a useful device. When you're caught up in them, then there's the need to let go of that caught upness. But otherwise, let them come, let them go. See, that's dropped away body mind. Then all sorts of states, body mind, appear, disappear. Because that's exactly this nature of our life. And we don't have control, nor need we figure out where they come from or where they're going to. Because they're not who we are. They are, and they're not. When we attach ourselves to particular thoughts, I'm this great juicy thought, then we make ourselves into trouble. Because then what happens when the juicy thought disappears? What happens when we forget the juicy thought? Then we have to go looking for it. Even some juicy, quote, experience, even some juicy experience in practice, even some juicy awakening, if we carry it around and hold on to it, it becomes poison. Okay, I think that's enough. I've been talking much too long. So, thank you all. And if need be, we can talk about this individually in Doksan. And I'll have to come up with another juicy talk tomorrow.